Maybe I'm in love with you. I say maybe. Maybe I'm in love with you. You put your arms around me, I'm in love with you. You say that you believe me.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. And today, Carolyn Nowak is here in the studio. Her book, Girl Town, top shelf publishing, hot off the press.
Yeah, right, yesterday. Carolyn? Well, I mean, yesterday. It's been kind of like soft out for a while at comic book stores only.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like the Vault of Midnight.
Yes, exactly. They've had it for a while now.
And you've gone to some conventions, talks.
Yeah, I went to New York Comic Con like about a month ago. That was a bit like not the right context for it, but I'm getting into it like too early. But
we could circle back to
if you want. I mean, it's not like super interesting, but it debuted at the Small Press Expo, which is in Bethesda, Maryland. That happens every September, so that's where it like first came out. But they only brought 80 copies, so it sold out.
Yeah. Which is great.
Yeah, it was right? cool. It's it was like, cool.
Soon, the Top Shelf is going to have to be printing more.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I really don't
Hopefully,
know.
People
are like, how's it selling? And I'm like, I have no idea.
Well, as far it's selling out. You know
well,
that.
Oh, like, yeah, that's true. In that one context. where...
But you don't have to say that. You can just end the sentence earlier.
It's selling out.
And
I've witnessed it with my own eyes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's selling out.
Well, actually, I know. Which is then complicated.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not at all what Girl Town is about.
And then people react. They're like, oh, I can't get a copy. Right. Like, oh, no, that's not what I meant. It's actually perfectly available.
And I should say thanks to Lee for sending me a copy from Top Shelf Publishing. Really appreciate it, because Carolyn, you don't have a copy.
I don't.
So we're going to be, these things are rare. These
I'm going to get copies tomorrow.
And they're going to be at Vault of Midnight. Right.
Right, yeah. And, yeah. Yeah, you can totally get it there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so. I'm not going to go buy my own book, though. That's
not again. No, just kidding. I'm just kidding. So Carolyn Nowak is here. As you can tell, we're like going to have a great, I feel like it's going to be, I hope I don't jinx it, a great
hour. Yeah, I know.
Hour,
you keep saying that
hour.
And I'm like, cool it.
Okay, it could be miserable,
it could
folks,
be
but just like stay tuned, because either way, it'll be interesting, right, Carolyn?
Yeah, my whole life is about managing expectations, so. Well, I didn't mean to sound so deep there. That's
yeah. We don't usually get into that until like minute 13. Carolyn's jumping ahead.
I'm sorry.
Carolyn Nowak. Okay. I'm going to read the short bio in the back of Girl Town. And then we're going to talk about your biography.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Great.
Carolyn Nowak graduated from the University of Michigan's School of Art and Design in 2011. She lives in Ann Arbor.
That's it. That's all you need to know. It's not even called that anymore. It's the Penny Stamp School of Art and Design.
That's right.
Yeah. So there's.
So you went pre-Penny?
Yeah, I graduated in 2011. So
when did it become Penny Stamps?
I don't like a few years after that, like 2014 maybe,
okay.
Which is cool. I don't know.
Did they still have this like speaker series?
Oh
when
yeah.
You were there, so all like the things were the same. It was just named.
Gave a huge donation to. Rename the school. I guess I don't know.
Let's just talk about it.
Like,
we're
going to
talk
people.
About marketing and money for this. Is like
no,
financial living writers hour.
Penny,
I don't know. Sorry, what bad question.
Penny Stamps. Her husband was like the commencement speaker at my art and design commencement, and he was really nice. Rose Stamps. His name is Rose Stamps, and he gave me a big hug, and I was like, thanks for all the money you gave the school, Ro.
And are those their real names? Did you ask them that?
Oh my God.
Okay, let's
that's so
let's,
rude.
I didn't mean it to be. If you're listening, I love those names. I just feel like they're
Penny
so good.
Rose.
They're made up. Like, it's like, I want to be
I know, it's,
this.
I mean, it's
which is great.
It's weird because, I mean, this is not me being mean, I should say, but so the school is called Penny Stamps, and then there was a woman that I worked with there to do some like promotional illustrations with, whose name was Truly Render, which is like another two like words.
What?
Those are words that are not names.
This is madness.
Like,
it's like two.
This is madness.
It's two just. On the notes,
I know.
Right?
Well, it's just, it's yeah. like the, it sounds like the Matrix is glitching or something.
Yes.
And it's like their names got switched, like just to nouns,
exactly.
like other nouns on accident. Sorry.
No, it's true, though. It's, I don't know. Now I feel like, I don't know. How do we feel about our names now, everyone?
I mean, they're all made up. They're all made up, so it's okay. We don't have to reflect on this.
Yeah, we don't usually get to reflection until minute 22.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So Girl Town, hot off the presses. So excited to have a chance to talk with you about this book. Excellent cover. So your parents just saw the cover.
Yeah, that's true.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
And they love it.
Well, my mom said she loved the cover. And then I was like, okay, Mom, I'm at the liquor store. I have to go. And then the conversation ended. So...
Sorry. So
that sounded like a cute story or whatever, but that's just like literally it's just an episode from the moment, right? It's just true. Okay.
It's so Betsy, one of the characters, is on the cover, and it's from the title story,
Girl Town.
But is this image actually isn't, I don't think it's in the story, is it?
No,
the
it's
one that's
not.
On the cover.
Okay, so have you ever seen the painting Truth Coming Out of Her Well to Shame Mankind? I don't know who painted it. I can never remember his name. It was just some artist man.
Somebody out there listening
is yelling.
I've seen it.
Oh yeah.
I've
I mean no, it. A lot of people have seen it because it's become kind of like popular on the internet because it depicts this like woman climbing out of a well and she's yelling at the viewer, like, and she looks really, really mad. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if so it's Betsy, the character from Girl Town, and she's crawling out of a manhole cover, like in the middle of, she's crawling out of a manhole in the middle of the street.
Which street is this? Do you have like a street in mind? Because of Ann Arbor, I'm wondering.
I actually took that photo, I referenced a photo that I took in Ypsilanti. I had my roommate with me, Olivia, and she like crouched on the street so I could get like the angle right and all that, yeah.
And some of the shadowing.
Yep,
and
exactly.
See art happening, art being made in Ipsy and Ann Arbor.
Yeah, yeah.
So Girl Town, because the Girl Town, the collection is actually spans like across like a decade, right?
I think the first thing in there, so Girl Town was the first thing I made that's in this book. And I think that's from 2014. So only four.
Oh, yeah.
2014 or 2015.
Oh, so not really.
Yeah, not really.
Sorry.
That old.
You're like, stop trying to make it sound like it took me a lot longer than it did.
No, I mean, like, I'm just trying to think of what I was doing in 2008. And I was absolutely not drawing comics. So, like.
What were you doing?
I think I was studying geology. Yeah.
Here.
Sorry, you're just like looking at me like, elaborate, please.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I was studying geology here. I kind of had like a fight with art and I like broke up with her for a while and then we got back together later. But
did you draw when you were a kid?
Like, I mean, like, I always like intended to be an artist, like in high school and stuff, but then I like, you know, I was 18 and I went to art school, and I don't know if you know this, but the art school here is weird. But I mean, I think it's like good, but it's also weird. And I think like for a young person who didn't know how to do anything or like didn't know like what thoughts to have or how to have them, it was like a really intimidating experience because it's set up very much like a grad program where it's supposed to be self-directed. When I was 18, I was like, no, thank you. I'm not ready. And so I was like, geology. I switched to geology for a year and then I switched back because I was... geology is cool, but there's a lot of math. Math is cool too, but I wanted to draw.
Yeah.
I guess that's the story. I came crawling back. I literally walked into the like one of the administrator's offices at the art school and I was like, Joanne, can I come back? And she was like, no. But then she let me. She was just kidding.
Do you think, did that happen to other people too? Or was your experience like a...
People didn't usually come back.
They just kept going. They're like, rocks are good.
Yeah,
I like the rocks.
I mean, I think that's probably true of like a lot of art schools though. It's just like you have a mild interest in art when you're in school. And it's like, I guess I'll do that when I'm in college. And art college is just like... I don't know. It's
I think maybe the structure of it is just so different from the things that I was used to. And I don't know, I just wasn't a self-starter. Like, high school was very easy for me because it was a lot of hand-holding.
And that was in Holland, Michigan.
Yeah, but in college, I, like, failed my very first assignment it was too much independence. Wow, we're, like, really getting off on this tangent, aren't we?
Well, too much independence. Well, it's, like, because you're almost, it sounds like expected, like, maybe to have a project idea.
Right, you're supposed to have your own ideas. And I was just like, I'm an 18-year-old white girl. Like, my parents aren't even divorced. I've got nothing to talk about. And I figured out later that I did have stuff to talk about. But when I was 18, and plus it was like, I don't know. I just think when you're 18, there's, like, most people don't have anything interesting to say because you're 18. You're dumb. It's okay. I mean, there are plenty of savants out there, you know, who can make amazing art when they're, like, 18 and stuff. But I wasn't one of them. And that's fine.
So when you came back, did you feel like you had more of an idea of what you wanted, or were you just, like, determined to get through it and know that it was part of, like, a longer journey?
I don't,
not to be,
you know,
cheesy about
I mean, you can be cheesy about it. I have a lot of cheesy thoughts about art all the time.
Thank you.
If you're going to do it, and if you're going to do it well, you kind of really have to believe in it. And I do. I didn't at the time. It's not like I went back from geology and I was like, oh, I miss thee and I must be with you. I usually tell people that it's, like, the only thing I'm allowed to do because I'm so bad at everything else, but that's not true. I'm pretty smart. But when I came back, it wasn't with, like, a renewed sense of direction. It was just like, I don't know.
Maybe a determination to get through it, whatever it
took.
Yeah,
I think that was it. It was just kind of like, there were a lot of, like, like, if there was, like, a flashback montage going on where it's like, these are the reasons that I went back to art school, there were all these, like, little instances where I was, like, getting really upset because, you know, I was, like, in geology class drawing all day, and then I had this boss tell me, like, I was, like, doodling one day, and this boss I had at the cafeteria was like, well, you really picked the wrong field. You shouldn't be studying geology. You should be doing art. And, of course, since I was, like, a dumb young person, I put them all into this narrative where it's like, I'm wasting my potential. My destiny lies elsewhere. And so, you know, I mean, you know, when you're 19, you're, like, really dramatic. Yeah, that kind of thing.
And you were also like, the universe is telling me, because you're
because I was like, no one else is telling me anything. So this must be the thing.
Yeah, the signs.
Yeah. And so I went back. I mean, and that's good because, like, it's just, you know, it's defined all the stuff. And I think it's cool to get a slow start. I've decided that's the cool thing. I used to really want to be a prodigy, but now I'm like, no, it's better. It's better to get success when you're older or whatever. And I don't mean success. I mean, like, production, I guess.
Like
when
find,
I was
find what you want.
Right. Like, even when I went back to art school, I still sucked at it. Like, it took me years and years to, like, get my stuff together enough to, like, actually produce anything.
Do you have to kind of recover after art school sometimes?
Yeah. I think that's kind of true. I mean, after I left art school, I didn't do anything for a long time, like, of my own that is really notable. I did a lot of, like, really, really bad experiments that I remember. I mean, when I left, I don't know, I had this, like, nervousness when I was in art school where I really wanted to be a cartoonist or an illustrator, but I knew I wasn't that good at it. And I was so anxious about that fact that I, like, wouldn't go look at other people's work. Like, I really didn't expose myself to a lot of work until I was older, just because I was, like, so afraid to see, like, where I measured up, you know? And I think that's not actually uncommon, but as soon as I did start exposing myself to work, I did it so slowly that I, like, would end up just copying someone in my own work. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense, but, like, I would run into one person and really, really like their artwork, and I'm like, oh, this is how you're supposed to, like, illustrate things. And then I would try to just, like, one-to-one ape them. And I did that a lot after college, just because, like, I still didn't really know what the heck to do. And I also had a day job. I worked at the hospital. I was a medical illustrator. I mean, I was a student temp. I'm doing air quotes. But that was the job. It was like doing art, medical radiology stuff.
Which are some beautiful drawings. I've seen a few of them on your website.
Thank you.
Let's take a short break and then we're going to come back. The next song you're going to hear is Carolyn Nowak's Choice.
I picked this. I'm sorry.
You're listening to Living Writers. We've got Stephanie behind the glass. We've got Carolyn Nowak here in the studio with Girl Town on the table. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back.
What's wrong? You're enchained by your own sorrow. In your eyes, there is no hope for tomorrow. How I hate to see you like this. There is no way you can deny. Chiquitita, tell me the truth. I'm a shoulder you can cry on. Your best friend, I'm the one you must rely on. You were always sure of yourself. Now I see you.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, I'm glad you did. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today on the program, Carolyn Nowak is here. Her book out with Top Shelf Publishing, Girl Town. So thanks for so it's your favorite song, Carolyn.
Picking favorites of stuff is not a useful sort of
exercise.
You're right. It's up there. I don't know. It just makes me feel amazing when I listen to Chiquitita. And I picked it because, have you ever seen the movie Muriel's Wedding?
Yes, but it's very sad, isn't it?
That. And it is very, very sad. It is really sad. But the thing that I always remember about that film is like, well, for one thing, I really identify with Muriel. She changes her name in the movie. Anyways, I really identify with her. That movie is all about, this girl, and she's like really, I just said I identified her with her, but this is not a description of me. She's so depressed that she like sits in her room all day and listens to ABBA. And then she like runs away from home and moves in with her like good friend. And I don't know. It's the movie's about their friendship, like her and this girl, and the whole movie is like scored with ABBA songs. Like they, when the two girls like first like become friends, they do this like performance to the ABBA song Waterloo, and it's like this lip syncing contest or something. And it's just like I get inspired every time I see this scene. I don't know why. I mean, I picked it because like that kind of thing is really like reminiscent of Girl Town and the kind of thing that I try to do there, where it's just like, look at these girls. They're having fun together. They care about one another. And I just love ABBA. And Chiquitita's not even in that movie. It's just my favorite I haven't like read the lyrics or anything, but it's like a girl singing to her friend, and she's like, it's gonna be all right.
Which is a good message, because sometimes we have to hear that.
Yeah, and it's got like such a weird like oompa thing going on with it.
Because ABBA does that through some of their music, right? There's something, it's very supposedly melodic, but there's often discordant.
Yeah, like, I don't know. There's something, there's just something about it that, like, I adore. And sorry, I've gone on way too long and sincerely about the song Chiquitita by ABBA.
Thank you, though.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I sure appreciate
it.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
But it does, because as you were talking, I was like, oh, I can see how that's part of Girl Town. Yeah. Like the mission.
Like, I have no idea if, like, that's some philosophy that ABBA has on their own. I'm like, I love ABBA, but I'm also a casual listener of ABBA.
Yeah, we can't speak for their...
I can't speak for their intent, and I don't even know that much about them. But
I think it's important that you pointed this out.
When I listen to their music, like, I think of, like, female camaraderie, and maybe that's because of Mamma Mia, but I don't know.
Oh my gosh. I can see how this whole, it's just going to be ABBA from here on out.
There's just something about ABBA that makes me think of that. I think maybe it's just because it's like me and my dumb friends and the thing that we like, I don't know.
But female camaraderie?
Yeah.
Is so important to not even say it in an articulate fashion, but it's like this book Girl Town is examining different, like, these little their whole worlds that we get dropped into, where you have an experience or a feeling. It's not necessarily the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just making an expression. Carolyn, sorry, Carolyn.
Yeah,
you have to see my faces.
Worry.
The magic of radio.
Yeah,
though,
right.
So, Girl Town. Why did you choose that one to be the name of the book, and even the title of that first comic?
I mean, this is gonna make me sound like a jerk, but I do very few things with a lot of intent. The intent usually dawns on me later. I picked Girl Town as the name for the collection because it's the name of my favorite story in the collection. And I don't really know why I named that story Girl Town. I mean, it's got this folksy sounding thing and it's just a town with girls in it. I don't know.
Because you've heard of things like Boys Town or these famous, but Girl Town.
It just sounded folksy and kind of Midwestern to me for some reason. And then also, I don't know, there's something about it that's it is what it is. Here's the story.
Something solid. And also it's going to be a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love titling things. It's my favorite thing to do.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you feel like it just comes to you, or
no.
Do you feel like you're mulling it over? And
I think Girl Town just came to me. But sometimes I really struggle. Diana's Electric Tongue took me a little longer. Radishes was obvious. Sometimes I struggle, but it's just so fun because you get to kind of put a whole lacquer on the whole story. This is the lens you view this through. And it doesn't usually have a huge impact. But for me, there's some weird little fine tuning thing that a title can accomplish. Anyways, maybe I'm saying things that are obvious. Okay.
So why is Girl Town your favorite? Because out of all of them, and I've covered their ears, so the others won't hear. No, just kidding.
Oh, but, well, I do tell people it's my favorite child. And when Top Shelf first contacted me years ago about perhaps doing something with them, the guy who runs Top Shelf, Chris, pointed out Girl Town in particular, and that made me like them because they picked my favorite child, you know? And I don't know.
Or you could trust them.
I trusted them. Because Girl Town and Radishes came out at the same time. And Radishes, it's a story for, kids more. I made it, specifically for A2CAF, for the Ann Arbor, like kids comic convention that they have every year, because I didn't have any kids stuff really. But it's like very popular.
Could you tell a little bit about Radishes?
Yeah, like it's about like two girls who go to a mall. They skip school and they go to the mall all day, but it's like in a fantasy context. And so it's like a cool fantasy mall where magic stuff happens.
Puzzles with no solutions.
Right. Like it's
still creepy guys somehow.
Yeah. And but I was saying Radishes was really much more popular than Girl Town, like when it came out. Like Radishes won an Ignatz Award at Small Press Expo. And I don't know, like Girl Town was just always my favorite. And most people, like when they would approach me and be like, "Hey, I want to work with you," they would reference Radishes. But Chris was like, "Girl Town." I was like, "Yeah, you unlocked the code." I don't know. That makes me sound like I was like getting a bunch of offers, but that's not true. It's just like usually when people reference my work, they're like Radishes, but Chris was like Girl Town, and it's just my favorite because it's like kind of mean or something. I don't know. It's got like an edge or something. It's like got an edge and it's romantic and it's kind of sad and
there's a lot going on.
There's so much going on.
And an economy of space. And so many characters that you managed to...
I know. I'm so talented.
You are. You're pretty talented. You're very talented.
Yeah. It's just something like... It's just something I like ripped off really quick. You know? Yeah. And it's got all these like...
Do you want to read the first line of it?
Yeah. Because I think that's... Like, I like the tone of it. So the first line of Girl Town, there's an illustration with three girls like sitting in a crappy living room. And the first line is, "I have lived with Ashley and Jolene since we all got kicked out of astronaut school for being too good looking to be sent to outer space." And then that tone follows. And it's just about these kind of like really smart girls who don't know what to do with themselves. And they have a set of neighbors who are all lunch. Get this book out of my face. I'm just going to keep looking at it. That's not good for me.
They have neighbors.
They have neighbors. So there's three lunch ladies are their neighbors. And they sort of have this like frenemy kind of like competition going on. But they also like are good friends. They also have like a lot of affection for each other.
Because they watch real life murder mystery
shows
together.
There's all sorts of stuff in this story. It's like about untangling like inner misogyny that you have like against yourself and against your fellow women. There's like crap. I mean, I wrote the story and I was just like, this is how the story goes. But then later when I... When I look back, I'm like, oh, that's what this is about. Which I can never tell when I say that if it makes me sound like a jerk. Or
why would it make you sound like a jerk?
Because it's like, oh, I did that and I didn't even know it.
No, because I think what you're doing is you're making something and you're following, like you've started with these characters.
Yeah.
And you're seeing what the...
It very much just felt like, let's just see what happens. And they're lunch ladies, I guess. Whatever. And it just kind of became this thing where it's like, should women compete with each other? Or I don't know.
And then there's this, like... Well, I think what's also interesting is there's like these strange, like we're not sure what the setting is because there is an astronaut school. So there's always this.
It's not a real place. Yeah.
So you've got this veneer, but there's very real emotions and things at stake. But then there's like suddenly this moment where one of the characters, Jenny, doesn't have an arm.
Yeah.
And then there's a page where that's talked about where she did have one and then she didn't, and then one of the characters is it Jillian she says
Jolene
she says, "Who cares, there are billions of ways to lose arms."
Oh, actually that's Ashley
or Ashley.
It doesn't matter.
Well, she's really different. Like she's like kind of
she's really mean. Yeah.
And then Jolene says,
okay, so like Ashley, sorry, we shouldn't.
Can I just say this one last line, Carolyn?
Yeah.
I just realized how heavy arms are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this really beautiful, weird moment.
Thank you.
That happens, and it's not. And then there's a lot more to come. The story is just really getting
that's like
going
10 pages
at that
into
point.
The book. Yeah, that's right.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that Ashley Ashley and Jenny are like the two mean ones. Like Ashley is the mean astronaut and Jenny is the mean lunch lady. But like to me, they have like the most affection for one another out of like anybody in the whole group for some reason. And I don't know why, because they barely interact.
And do you try to show that through how you position them when they're watching the horror film or when they're murder mystery, I mean?
I guess when I look at this comic, I'm like, wow, all these decisions were totally arbitrary. And then when I look back, I'm like, oh yeah, Jenny and Ashley, they're best friends. And maybe that's something I had like in my mind just naturally, but...
Well, in your subconscious?
In my sub... Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe? I don't know.
Well, let's take a short break. And okay. When we come back, we're going to have an answer. No, just kidding. Totally kidding. Don't make promises you can't keep, right? But we'll have more questions. And I think that's kind of more fun anyway.
Cool.
So today on the program, Carolyn Nowak is here. Her book, Girl Town, out with Top Shelf Publishing. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. We've got Steph behind the glass, and we'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today on the program, Carolyn Nowak is here, Girl Town. Can you tell us about the song?
Okay, so that song.
So pretty.
So people know that you tell authors to bring in songs, right? Like, why? Okay, the reason I chose that song, I know it is a beautiful song. Okay. So the fourth story in Girl Town is called The Big Burning House, and it's about two girls who have a podcast about... a vampire movie, but the vampire movie kind of doesn't exist within the context because it was like aired on television and then like never seen again. So it's almost like a legend. And so the movie itself exists entirely within the fandom. And that song you just heard was the theme song used on a podcast that I did with my best friend, Lisa Dubois. And it was about the show The Young Pope, which was a show on HBO like a year ago. And it was just about Jude Law being the Pope. And there was all sorts of religious. Okay. There was all sorts of like religious symbolism or whatever. I'm sure there was like a story there. But like Lisa and I could not pay attention to it because the Pope was a sexy dude and we just thought that was like the funniest thing in the world. So we started a podcast where we just like talked about every episode, and our friend Mary Fraser made us that theme song. And the theme song, I don't like I must explain that the theme song is not an original composition. It's based on a Lana Del Rey song called Diet Mountain Dew. In the show, the Young Pope exclusively drinks Cherry Coke Zero. For some reason, it's just like a weird detail. And so on one episode of the show, I sang a parody of Diet Mountain Dew that was called Cherry Coke Zero. And it's all about like the young, sexy Pope. And then Mary took that and like made a real song out of it, which was like embarrassing because it was like, oh, Mary, do you think we're doing like a real podcast? Because we're just like recording a podcast and just like putting it on Facebook. This is not a big deal. And it made us sound way too legitimate. but it's a beautiful song that I like really enjoy listening to. And there's nowhere you can listen to our podcast anymore because, well, I mean, I'll put it up someday maybe, but it got like 7 listens.
an episode.
But it seems like the time is now to put it back. You've got Girl Town.
Yeah,
coming out, like,
I mean, it's not something we did to like be popular or anything. And I mean, it actually leads into speaking about this story, because this story is just about two friends who have this podcast that's maybe like not necessarily popular, even in the context of the fandom surrounding this vampire movie. But like, me and Lisa did that podcast just like for fun, and we had an amazing time. We had we were just like two friends who assigned ourselves like a couple hours to talk about something stupid. And it's like, you have to talk. Like, it's like I discovered conversation. And then I talked to my friend and I learned stuff about her. Did you know that you could just talk to people? But, that is not what I'm saying. I'm saying that, like, sometimes when you, like, really focus on something and you talk about it with your friends, you can just, like, learn new things about them. And I'd known Lisa for 10 years at the time, and I feel like it made us closer in so many ways. And so this comic is like came about because of that, and which is why, okay, that's the long story behind the Cherry Coke Zero theme song. And the podcast was called Cherry Coke Zero. We were going to call it the Young Pope Cast, but that was already taken because there were multiple podcasts. Because
other people were also discussing Jude Law and his Cherry Coke Zero. Jude Law couldn't save Cherry Coke Zero, right?
That's true. I mean, I don't know. My dad loves it. So.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very popular.
And
among some dads. Among some dads. Among dads who love Weight Watchers. This has not been a paid advertisement for Weight Watchers. No, but there were a surprising number of podcasts about the Young Pope, and ours was not a popular one.
So, but having that experience and like getting to like and feeling that synergy with Lisa, your friend, then that inspired you to make The Big Burning House, like to try to somehow.
And this is exactly that. I'm pointing to a drawing. No one listening can see, but these two characters are basically exactly me and Lisa. Yeah, so it was really easy to write, actually, because I just like listened to the podcast and copied like the way we talked to each other, and yeah, I mean, like the thing about it, like,
but you wanted to show something maybe about the relationship, right?
Like, I mean, it's not necessarily specifically about the relationship between me and Lisa. I mean, it is a bit, but I don't know. It's just more about like reflecting on media and. I wanted to have a bunch of fun making a movie, but not really having to, without really having to make it. Because I got to draw these like stills from the movie. I got to draw a poster. I got to write a bunch of IMDb trivia. Right. I got to write a bunch of fake fan fiction. My friend Olivia did a piece of fan art that's in the book. Like, I don't know. It was really fun to just create, I said this to someone earlier, but the movie in this comic is called The Constellation. It's about a girl who gets invited to a vampire ball to be a sketch artist because you can't take photos of vampires. And it's, you know, it's a fake movie, but I got to like basically make this movie in this fake world and then totally control the reaction to it, which is why, like, which is so fun. I love making fictional art. Because you can always just be like, and then everybody said this about it. It's like, ha! It's like cheating, you know? I got to make a movie and also everyone loved it. Because I control everyone in this universe.
And you made a podcast. Like, then you put it into this other form.
Exactly.
So it's like this meta.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I don't know. I like, it's fun to like make a little universe and then like find one tiny little like corner of it. That, you know, it's hard to describe and just like describe that as best as you can. Anyways, yeah,
that's lovely. That's
thank you. This I should mention that this comic first appeared in a comics magazine curated by my friend Zainab Akhtar called Critical Chips. That's a plug for her. She's great.
She's in the acknowledgments.
Yes. She runs a comics subscription called Short Box, and she's basically like
She's basically like the smartest person working in college. She's like a reviewer and a publisher. Anyways, I'm just going on about Shortbox.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Everyone should check. If you want good comics, go to Shortbox. It's online.
That's great.
Yeah.
This is, so how did you find your way to comics? Like to building, like, cause we, at the top of the program, we were talking about art school, and that wasn't necessarily the direct line to what you found. Like, somehow you found it.
Yeah.
Like, how did you find Girl Town?
I don't know. I don't... It's such a long... It's... I guess it's not really, like... It's a long and not very interesting story, probably. I just always wanted to...
What's the montage? What are you seeing?
Montage. I'm seeing myself, like, reading Calvin and Hobbes as a child, which is a very typical origin story. You know, just this weekend, my mom told me, she was like, yeah, you hated reading. I had to buy you comics, which I didn't know. I was like, oh, I thought I liked reading. Surprise. But I read a lot of comics as a child, and then I read manga in high school because I was a dork. And then I think I just didn't want to deal with other people. I wanted, because there's not a lot of like visual storytelling mediums where you can do everything yourself. You know, like I couldn't make a movie by myself. Not a good one. But I was like, I knew that in Japan, people who drew manga just, you know, they have a lot of assistants, but they're in control of everything typically. I mean, they have editors and stuff, but like they write and draw the story, which is what I wanted to do. And then I like slacked off for about 10 years and then I figured it out. I don't know.
But you were always drawing somehow?
Yeah, I was always I was always like doodling and like thinking up stories and like... just being like a total waste in college. I don't know. I was really bad at college, basically. I didn't, the whole lack of direction thing. I mean, it's on me. I'm not blaming anyone.
And when did you, doesn't sound like you are,
no.
Doesn't. And so when did you decide, like, I'm going to maybe take comics more seriously, these worlds that I can create? Like, I can see this small, tiny part of a corner of a universe and I'm gonna try to do it.
It just kind of came about, I guess. It was always the intent, I suppose. Like, I always had the idea that I was gonna, like, I mean, this is really common with like people just starting out in comics, where I was like, I have some giant story within me, my magnum opus, someday I shall post it all online for everyone to read. But you really can't start there. And so I was just kind of like experimenting with different like little things, and which is what Girl Town and Radishes like both are.
And you thought of them as experiments.
Yeah, basically. And I had been making comics before that, and those two like felt very not experimental in the experimental art sense. They were experimental for me. They were very ordinary, actually. But I would just make comics and put them on the internet, and then at some point, an editor from Boom, which is a comics publisher, contacted me and asked me if I wanted to work on Lumberjanes, which is a big, which is a pretty popular series. I mean, that was like an incredible opportunity. And so that was kind of like where it started. I had been freelancing for a year and I had just gone back to like working at a job. I got a job at a screen printer and I was there for like 3 months before I got the call to work on Lumberjanes. And so I quit.
But they found you. Lumberjanes
just
found
the internet.
You
just
because
the internet.
You had your work up on like a site. Like,
no, it was Tumblr at the time.
Tumblr.
No, I don't know anybody who uses Tumblr anymore though. But yeah, I was like pretty popular on Tumblr. Moderately popular.
So they found you because of that, because people connected to what you were.
Yeah.
You were,
yeah. They were like, hey, you can draw. You just draw for us now.
And was it okay stepping into the Lumberjanes?
No, it was really hard.
Let's talk about that. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back. We'll talk about another song that Carolyn so carefully chose for us today. Carolyn Nowak, Girl Town, Top Shelf Publishing. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. We'll be back.
Oh. this precious time when time is new. All through the night today, knowing that we feel the same without saying. We have of no past, we won't reach back. Keep with me forward all through the night. And once we start, the need to cleanse and death.
Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Carolyn Nowak is here in the studio. Carolyn, I'm so glad you are. It's been fun. So Cyndi Lauper, I guess, is one of your all-time favorites, too.
I want to be like, you know, I haven't thought about it that much, but she totally is. I mean, that's just true. It's because my mom listened to her when I was a kid, you know, so when I hear her voice, that just reminds me of my mom. I don't know. That's all.
Oh, shout out to Mom.
Hi, Mom. If you're listening.
And the song figures into another one of the stories in the book.
Yeah. It's actually in the last story. The last story in the book is called Please Sleep Over, and it's actually the only thing in here that was made specifically for this book. Everything else had been produced earlier. But in the story Please Sleep Over, one of the two main characters go to a bar and someone is singing karaoke and they're singing that Cyndi Lauper song, and that was actually chosen by my roommate Carta. I was just like, give me a song, and she picked the perfect one. And it really, like, if you in the scene, the woman is singing and the lyrics kind of get cut off a little bit for like legal reasons.
Is that why? Because I was like
I wanted to put the whole song in there just because like if you can manage to like put a whole song in a comic or like put real complete lyrics in, it can pace things. Like if it's a recognizable song, it's one of like the only ways that you can really control someone like reading your comic, because people just like if it's a popular song, people just like know the tempo and they'll follow along the panels at the rate of the tempo of the song, which is really amazing. And I stole the idea completely from a friend of mine, Sophia Foster Domino, who's probably the best cartoonist alive. But she had a story in which like someone was watching someone sing, and I don't know if she got away with doing more than 29 words or something. But Lee, my editor, was like, 29 words, that's the max, that's all you can have. And that's not a lot of words. But
so
the thing is, I don't
whole page.
Right. I don't know if all through the night is like that identifiable. Anyways, like I don't know if people like would read the lyrics and hear it in their head as much as they would any other song. So it's not like it was going to be a real effective tool in the first place. So it's okay that it got a little cut off. But I really, sorry, I'm just like looking at this story and I like can't really like comment on it too much because I only made it like a year ago. And so looking at it still makes me feel like work, you know, where I'm just like, ah, it's that thing.
Because it's still too, it's still just made.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I don't know. It's just kind of like hard to talk about because like I feel like I can talk about the other stories because it feels like someone else did them, you know, like, oh, that was young
me.
Yeah. And someday I'll like look back at this story and be like, oh, that's what I was trying to do. But right now I'm like still in it, you know, kind of. Anyways,
thanks for trying to talk to like, because it's really interesting to hear you.
And the story is kind of about like parents a little bit, so it made sense to like put that Cyndi Lauper song in there because it just feels so much like something. It just reminds me of my mom, I guess. Anyways,
before the break, we were talking about Lumberjanes and the work you did for them and how it's hard.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you were wondering if it was hard because it was like someone else's property, like someone else's...
Someone's world that someone else had created, right, and you're stepping into it.
Right.
And, but then look at fan fiction or...
Yeah, I didn't have a... It wasn't like hard in that aspect. It was just hard... I mean, it was hard for like a lot of stupid reasons. Like, for one thing, I had never drawn that much comic before. Like, I had to draw 66 pages. I had to draw 3 issues of comic, and I'd never done that before. And so that was daunting.
It's almost like Lumberjanes, where you're like grad school or something. It was like some sort
yeah,
of like
no, it was
rigorous
like a trial,
training.
Trial. It was like, yeah, it was like, it felt like training. It felt like, I cut my teeth.
Yes.
That's what I say about it. But it was hard for a lot of like little reasons. Like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. And also at the time I really hated drawing trees, and it takes place at a summer camp. And so like, I had to like get over that really fast. And then it was just hard because like the workflow was really, really intense and just a thing I wasn't used to yet.
But it professionalized you.
Oh yeah,
way,
it totally did.
It?
And I also, I mean, the publishers have like taken me around places. Like I got to go to Comic-Con the next year and like on their dime and stuff. So, yeah, and I've met so many great people because of working on Lumberjanes, and the fans of Lumberjanes are so nice.
Oh, yeah. good people.
Like some people work on cool stuff and have bad fans, but not Lumberjanes fans. Anytime I meet them, they're just like, "Hi, sorry to bother you." Like they're so respectful. They're like obsessed with respect. Yeah, they're nice. They're really nice.
Well, may you have nice ones for Girl Town.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, I pretty much do. I mean, like the cover is sort of like a filter for jerks a little bit. It's like, if you don't want to read this book, I don't, like, fine. I don't know. Like,
yeah, don't come to Girl Town.
Don't come to Girl Town.
I feel very protective about Girl Town now.
Good. I'm glad.
We should talk a little bit about Diana's Electric Tongue.
Oh yeah.
Before we have to go.
Right. So Diana's Electric Tongue. Should I just like give my elevator pitch about it or something? Or was there anything specific that you were like, this thing?
Because this is, so if we're talking about, because I guess there's chronology at work maybe with these, but I was actually thinking like this is the center of the book, quite literally. It's also the longest story in the book. And so we're spending a lot more time with these characters.
Right.
And I guess it's interesting because you also said this title, Diana's Electric Tongue, didn't come to you right away.
I think
earlier.
It took a little bit. I mean, it just, Girl Town just came very naturally in comparison, but
because like this character is actually grappling, like, I would say for all the stories in the book, there's remarkable created experience of like empathy is happening in all the stories.
Oh yay.
And so this one seems to be, you definitely can't dodge it. Not like you could dodge it in the other ones, too.
I guess, what like precisely do you mean by that in the context of Diana's Electric Tongue?
Well, I guess the most, the easiest way in, I think, for me would be to say that the main character, she like sells a piece of art and orders a robot boyfriend with the money.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I might be more comfortable with hearing your elevator pitch for it.
No,
but
you're good.
But
you're
I
good.
Would say that way of watching this character and her like dear friend, her roommate, like how they kind of come to respond to this robot man.
Yeah.
And how he even saves them at a certain point, you know, from rocks. No,
right.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that. So there's lots of, there's just really real feeling in it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I try.
What do you think? When did you know that, there was going to be a robot man? and she and Diana has like a robot tongue, I guess. So again, the futuristic, like these fantasy layers are always at play in these worlds you create, but they're all like, oh, of course she does. Of course she has this robot tongue.
So the thing that I tell people when they ask me like, why a robot boyfriend? I usually say like, I had just watched The movie Ex Machina. I've said this so many times, but I watched the movie Ex Machina and it like really irritated me that like the movie was like, what is intelligence and what is life? And it, but it was also like, don't worry, there's still naked ladies, you know, in this movie. It was just like, it felt like a really, really, I don't know. I was just salty because it was like, can we talk about AI without it being like also like a weird boner thing? And I was like, well, I'm going to have a boy sex robot. It was literally that level of like, defiance, of, which is like kind of like a really boring way to interrogate that whole problem anyways.
But look where it got you.
Yeah, but it, and then it just kind of like went from there. So I wasn't like trying to say anything about artificial intelligence here. I was just like, well, that's an idea. I guess I'll just do that. And then I wrote the first conversation that Diana has with Harbor, where she takes him into her room and she's like, well, I just broke up with my boyfriend. And I was just typing that and I was like, and he was famous and I was in a motorcycle accident. I lost my tongue. And then the whole story just kind of evolved from there.
And she takes him to a wedding.
She takes him to a wedding and then they get into a car accident and then she gives him a bath.
But I
which so, I was really excited about. I was like, oh, isn't that sexy? She gives him a bath. But it's not sexy. It's like fraught. I should mention that this is an award-winning story. It also won an Ig Nats Award. It was also in Best American Comics 2018, but it was only notable. There was no excerpt, which is the big honor. But
next year, next year.
I mean, probably not. But
one would. Well, I'm so glad that you're at work. And you're making.
Oh, thank you.
I love Girl Town. And it's so exciting that you're making it here in Ann Arbor, too.
Mm-hmm.
And come back and talk again.
I'd love to. I'll have more books. Don't worry.
Yeah, you will get rid of me. Yeah, you will. And we'll talk more about, I don't know, just the way of seeing and interplay of image and text. And there's more to come, Carolyn Nowak.
Cool. Yeah.
Girl Town, Top Shelf Publishing, out now. Vault of Midnight has it.
Yeah, I think Literati, Barnes and Noble has it. I don't know about Literati, maybe.
Literati, maybe Nicholas. They will be getting it.
Yeah.
If they don't already have it on the shelf.
Cool.
But definitely Vault of Midnight.
Yeah, they definitely have it.
Well, Carolyn, thanks for talking today.
No problem. And thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening, everybody out there. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time. Thank you.